We are your Cambridge 105.
Loving the summer in our city.
Broadcasting from the city centre on 105 FM and online, a very good Saturday afternoon to you. This is Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. Just before this, you've been listening to The Science Show, but welcome along to Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. This is where we, as this radio station, go out to some of the big events in the Cambridge area that are making up the summer in the city calendar. And we've got some fantastic things coming up on the show today. Must just tell you about a few of them. This week we'll be at the Covent Garden Street Party. Julian Clover will be reporting for us live there in a couple of minutes' time. We'll also be at the Cambridge Bumps. Lee Last is reporting for us there. We'll also be having a few interviews with regards to the UK National Garden Scheme and the Cambridge Carbon Footprints Open Day as well. But if you've got an event happening in Cambridge and you'd like to tell us about it, we can give it a promotion for you. You can email me, studio@cambridge105.fm. You can send me a text, 07919 070490, or you can tweet me at Cambridge105 on Twitter. We'll have the first set of interviews coming up right after this by Katy Perry. And now over to our first set of interviews. Now, this weekend, on selected weekends through the summer, the National Garden Scheme sees private gardens around Cambridge and up and down the country open to the public. One local garden that is opening the gate belongs to Sian and Mark Hugo of Aldridge. And Julian Clover went to meet them.
So tell me about the garden and the house. How long have you lived here?
I came here in 81, and the garden was just a field at the time, and the house was half this size. So everything in the garden that you can see, what the visitors can see, has been put in myself. I begged, borrowed, or stole it in the early days, and cuttings off everything I could find. There were a couple of old apple trees, but other than that, everything has been put in by myself, so I know each plant personally, really.
So did you set out with a plan of what you thought it was going to look like, or is it something that's evolved over the years?
It's grown over the years. You've got to remember, this is a house which has had five children, numerous dogs, many chickens and ducks and things going through it. It's a working garden. It's a garden that you won't find a perfect lawn. You'll find a garden that we like, and if others like it, that's fine. And if they don't, that's fine as well. It's a cottage garden. It's a 1 acre cottage garden with many places to walk to. The idea was to have a garden you walk to a different view, so you don't see it all in one vista. That the whole point was to create like rooms within a garden. And the planting is fairly haphazard. I regard a weed as a plant in the wrong place, but if a weed's very pretty and there's nothing else there, hell, you leave it there until you've got something better to plant in.
And do you source the plants locally, or do you sort of hunt through the various catalogues and brochures, and I guess online these days as well, to try and find that, you know, that perfect plant for the spot?
No, it's a bit of everything, really. I mean, as I said, it's a cottage garden, so it's very much native plants. There are a lot of plants that other people would regard plants they probably wouldn't have in their garden. It's not a formal garden as such. I don't have Latin names by them. There are a few exotic plants. I'm very keen on cacti and succulents, and there's a couple of greenhouses of those in. I even try and grow them in the garden. I have collected plants from visits to sort of try and spice things up a bit, so there are a few strange plants there, but mostly it's plants that people could grow in their own gardens, albeit probably on a smaller scale, and therefore that's why I think people like the garden, because it's something they could aspire to, albeit in a smaller scale.
What's the soil like here? Is that good for growing? Because I know it does sometimes vary around Cambridgeshire.
We're on a clay soil here on the edge of the Isle of Ely, so we're not in the sand of the highest point of the isle, which is Haddenham up the road. So clay is very difficult soil. It retains nutrients, but it can get very dry. Equally, it can get very muddy. So it does need a particular sort of technique to try and break it up, to add sort of vegetative material to it. But if you do the right things, you can grow fantastic plants. It will not grow rhododendrons and the acidic-loving plants, so that's the only problem. So if you want to grow those, you have to put them in pots.
And how about the watering? That can be a bit difficult, shall we say, in these dry summers we so often get, or the other reverse of it, of course, when we get far too much. How do you manage that?
It is difficult. We seem to get dry spells and then wet spells. Dry spells, you can end up with big cracks from the clay. It does take a bit of water, and I have put a basic irrigation system in, but it only really covers the vegetable patch and a few other places. So it is a bit of hard work, but again, you have to choose the right plants for the right area. And once you've got shrubs and things established, even in a drought, they do tend to hold on and get through the hard times. It's only the smaller plants, the young plants, you have to go around and make sure that they are growing away in the actual year you plant them.
So what made you want to open up your garden to have, I guess, complete strangers coming around and having a look?
I think it's always great to share something you love with other people, and that's one of the motivations. But the National Garden Scheme is a national scheme, and a lot of people know of it. There's a yellow book published each year, which you see all the gardens that are open at the times they're open and prices, etc. And the idea is to raise money for charity. And the National Gardens Scheme raises money for the Macmillan Charity and the Marie Curie Cancer Charity. In terms of the money raised, Cambridgeshire itself raised £47,000 last year for the charities, which was up on the year before, despite the horrendous weather we had to put up with. And over the last year, £2 million, I think it's about £2 million, was raised by the National Garden Scheme for these charities. So it is a huge contributor to these charities.
Is there a fee to get in?
Yes, we charge £3 per head for adults, and children are free.
So I gather you have a good supply of cakes from a lady who lives not too far away from you.
Yes, our neighbour up the road, 83-year-old Marge, she makes cakes. We offer homemade cakes and tea for £2 or £2.50, I can't remember exactly what it is. The money that we raise there goes towards supporting our own concern, which is the Barakazar Ibrahim School and Children's Centre in Kibera, in the middle of Nairobi, which is a huge slum in the middle of Africa, which was featured on Comic Relief. Lenny Henry visited. We visited that when we were there on a buying trip for our fair trade business. We import the fair trade goods from Kenya and indeed from South Africa.
Tell me about your visit to the centre.
We went to Kenya on a buying trip. We've got a very good friend there. It was a supplier who's become a very good friend. Her children are over here. So we went to visit, and she won't let you out of the country without taking you to the school in Kibera slum. We took our two youngest children with us, the girls.
How old were they at the time?
They were 11 and 13.
How do they take it? Because I guess it's the sort of thing that they might have seen, like Blue Peter, something like that, but to see it firsthand.
I think what hit them as we walked into the slum was the smell, and you don't get that on the TV, and that's... It's a huge thing because
they were talking about the smell of poverty, and that's that sort of thing.
It is, and there's a smell of a lot of other things as well, which are really quite horrible. And I think that got their attention straight away as soon as we walked in. But then you walk into the school, which is this sort of little oasis in the middle of all this squalor, and you've got the children who are looking as neat and tidy as they possibly can in their school uniforms that have got little holes and bits and pieces missing. But they're so proud of it, and they've got absolutely no concept of children in this country wagging school. They can't understand it at all. They've absolutely no idea why you would not want to go to school. And so they're so eager to show you what they're doing and how well they're doing and how so proud of their uniforms. And well, obviously, it's the only way they're going to get out of this mess that they're in.
But your commitment is pretty much, you know, ongoing, I guess, through the work in through the work in the shop.
Yes, the tea and cake money, in particular, and all that goes to the school. We sell some plants. We get a lot of groups. The WIs come in, so it all adds up through the year. And at the end of the year, we send off the money, and we've kitted out a whole science lab. They had a table. That was all they had. So they've got all the equipment, microscopes, they've got chemicals.
Presumably you're getting reports back, photographs perhaps, photographs. Of how the money's been spent, what's it's gone on.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that the money goes through our supplier, and so there are nobody's creaming money off the top. So all this money is going directly to the school.
So that was Julian Clover speaking to Sian and Mark Hugo of Eldreth about the National Garden Scheme. We'll be hearing the second part of that interview here on Summer Saturday, right after this by Lynn Anderson.
Serving our city and the surrounding areas.
We are Cambridge 105.
Community radio in your city. We are Cambridge 105. Lynn Anderson there and Rose Garden on this rather overcast and a damp Saturday afternoon here in Cambridge. This is Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. And now we'll hear the second part of the interview which Julian Clover conducted with Mark and Sian Hugo of Eldreth about the National Garden Scheme. And this is what they had to say next.
The important thing about the garden, I say, is to have places to walk to and see different things and rooms in a garden, as I said. a lot of places to sit and relax. We've had people that have fallen asleep here and we've had to sort of wake them up at 5 o'clock and say, excuse me, we're closing now. Very nice to see you, but could you please go now?
Leave until the next day, charge them another day's entry.
That's,
more
that's
money
an
raised.
Idea, yes, that's right, yeah. As well as the garden and all the plants, we do have some very interesting chickens and ducks.
I see chickens. Do they lay much?
Oh, they lay plenty of eggs. We sell them at the door.
I noticed there's a sign on the door there. Put your prices up.
Well, the chicken feed has become so expensive. I think it's probably due to the sort of farmers having problems with the climate, but... Yeah, we've had to put the price up. But they're still less than the supermarkets, and they're totally free range, as you can see. They've got a huge area to go
probably
in.
Probably a lot better in taste as well. There's a collection here.
Renowned everywhere. The duck you can see there, now he's got a story behind him. He's called Willie, and he knows his name. And he will come like a dog to you, and you can stroke him. He's ever so tame. He's a rescue duck from Ely. He's one of the Muscovies that was swimming around in Ely, but... Actually, he wasn't, because he was just a one-day-old duckling when we got him. Well, we didn't get him. Our friends got him in Ely, and they came to our garden, and we got him after 6 weeks when they could no longer handle him, and they'd brought him up by hand, and he was being raised with the dog. Doesn't know he's a duck. He thinks he's human. And he turned out to be that wonderful chap, and he bosses the place.
He looks quite a character.
He is a character. Yeah. He knows his name, I say, and he's got a fantastic memory. He remembered the people that brought him up, who came to visit him 2 years after they dropped him with us, and he knew them. You probably see quite a lot of these metal sculptures around. This is our main business. This is what we import. We import these from our craftsmen that we run in Johannesburg area. There's Zimbabwean craftsmen who work out of Johannesburg because it's easier. We bring these in containers. They're made from recycled oil drums. They're the best quality in the market. We're the only people bringing this particular range in. We do other things than herons, cockerels, ducks, some jungle animals, rhinos.
I see those. Some pigs over there. Pigs. Are they yours as well?
Yeah, pigs. We sell all these online and in the shop and to other retailers.
And how long have you been in that particular business for?
10 years now. It's our 10th year.
This area over here, is this part of the garden as well?
Chickens and ducks can go in this bit. We allow people to walk through this. We laughingly call it the wild garden, which means we allow the weeds to grow a bit better, a bit more than the other parts of the garden. It's supposed to be planted with sort of native trees and things. There are a few ones that have got in on the side door. Chickens and ducks can go in there. We allow people to go in there, but they keep to the paths because we don't want the wildflowers to be sort of trodden in. As I said, all this garden was just a field. Even the hedges have been planted by us over the years. And the willows are quite stunning. They were here when I came, and they were reportedly people who used to keep chickens before on that side. Chicken sticks in the ground made of willow, and they grew. And so those trees are grown from just sticks put in the ground, as willow is apt to do wherever you plant it.
How difficult is it to maintain the garden throughout the year? Can you be able to do it between the two of you, or do you need to get a helping hand in from time to time?
No, between the two of us. We have a young lad that comes in and does some donkey work now and again, but it's only sort of lugging things around and cutting edges and grass and things. It is between us. Once you've got a garden that's fairly mature with shrubs and trees, you can keep on top of it. Little and often is the story. The important thing is ground cover. If you've got things covering the ground, then weeds don't get a chance to grow. So, as I said, if you've got something that looks good, even though it might be considered a weed in some quarters, if it's nice flowers, I keep it there until I've got something better to grow. And then the weeds you don't want don't grow. So it's a question of ground cover, either with shading or with ground cover plants. I've always had a love of cacti, ever since I was 11. In fact, that's when my sort of idea of getting an interest in plants started. Cacti are very easy to grow. These are grown outdoors, and I have to protect them in the winter with a sort of temporary greenhouse. But to see others up in the greenhouse as well. So this is where my interest in gardens started.
I see what you mean about the different, if you like, quarters and portions of the garden. There's really a different feel to it here. Lots of greens going on with the shrubbery, the more flowers in the centre. And compare this to the vegetable garden, which we've just come from, which by its nature is fairly straightforward.
Yeah, I think it's important, I say, to be able to go to different places in the garden. I really don't like gardens where you can kind of see everything at once, usually sort of a border up the side and sometimes a path straight up the middle. I know some people think they've got to have gardens like, especially the smaller gardens, but it doesn't have to be like that. Even in a small garden, there's plenty of ways to do on a small scale what we've done here. That's quite a stunning plant.
Wow.
It's called a Viburnum opulus. See, I do know some Latin names, so I don't know many of them, but that is it's a snowball plant is another name for it, as you can see.
Very white, the flowers, yeah, on there.
I just hope they stay this way till the weekend.
That's the danger. These things do go very quickly when they decide to go, don't they?
Well, when you're planning for a garden opening, you've sometimes got to take plants out that are still flowering, knowing they won't be in 2 weeks' time. It adds a whole new range to what you would do in your ordinary garden. You kind of say, oh, give them a few more weeks, you know, let them flower a bit longer. But you've got to plan ahead. People do not want to come along and see great gaps where things were. They're not going to take nicely to saying, well, that was nice last week. Sorry, you've missed it. It's not going to happen.
So that was Julian Clover talking to Sian and Mark Hugo of Aldrith about their wonderful garden and the National Garden Scheme. And you can see Sian and Mark's garden. It's at 6 the Borough, Aldrith, Cambridgeshire. Their postcode is CB63PJ, so do pop that in your sat-nav and you'll get to them. Or there's their website as well, which is which you can get more information about any of the gardens and bits and pieces at, which is found at www.ngs.org.uk. And of course, you'll be able to hear that interview on the podcast, which will be available here on Cambridge 105 and on the website over the next coming days. Now, because of course Saturday does some fantastic things, we go out and champion all the local events, or as many as we can get to on a Saturday afternoon. And we can now cross over to Julian Clover, who's at the Covent Garden Street Party. Over to you, Julian.
Matt, good afternoon from what's a very damp Covent Garden this afternoon. Just wandering down the street now. The first thing you see as you walk down the street are these assorted blue plaques that have been created. Almost every house along here has one showing through the window. Let me just read a couple to you. So here we are, outside number 14. We've got William Ivatt Scar. He was a cabinet maker and he lived here between 1891 and 1907. And it's going past the turning into Mill Street now. This is where the action really kind of starts. They managed to seal off this part of the road. And amidst the pouring rain, we still have a number of people who are out here. The whole thing is raising funds for winter comfort for the homeless, Romsey Mill Aspire team, and also the Cambridge branch of Parkinson's UK. So just wandering through, got another of these plaques which have appeared here. This is outside 15B, Frederick William Shriven, who was a tailor. He lived there between 1872 and 1919. We've got a cake stall. There's some balloons and some street decorations on a lot of the places here, and a few bric-a-brac stalls which are around. And right at the bottom, where we've got even more bunting draped across the street, we have the theatre. Now, I have to confess that I was unaware that there was a theatre on Covent Garden, but there is. It's a drama studio, part of Anglia Ruskin, and that, at the moment, is home to Circus Skills and also the History Project. And we'll try and find out a little bit more about the History Project and indeed these blue plaques which are decorating Covent Garden this afternoon. And we'll do that in a short while. At the moment, Matt, back to you.
Thanks very much, Julian. That sounds like a fantastic day, even though it's rather wet outside. That's Julian Clover braving the rain for us at the Covent Garden Street Party. And we'll be crossing over to Julian again at around about a quarter to four. Anyway, here, welcome back to Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. And we can now cross back over to Julian Clover. And I believe he's got Eileen with him. Now, she's one of the organisers and landlady of the Six Bells. Over to you, Julian.
Thanks, Matt. Well, I've managed to find a little bit of shelter from the rain, even if you can hear the water on the roof here at the back of the Six Bells pub. And I've got the landlady, Eileen, with me, who's one of the organisers of the Covent Garden Fair. How many years have we been doing this for?
This is the fourth year. We decided to have a street party, mainly because we were jealous of Guido Street. And so a group of us got together 4 years ago and planned the party. And we decided, as well as having fun, we'd try and raise some funds for local charities. So we picked three charities that were important to people in the street. We chose Winter Comfort, which is the charity that the Six Bells sponsors all the time. The Romsey Mill Aspire team, because there are two young lads in our street who have been used that service.
And what does Aspire do?
It works with children with autism who are in mainstream school, but it just gives them, it's like a youth club, I think. And Parkinson's UK, the Cambridge branch, because one of our neighbours who sadly died since had Parkinson's and was involved in fundraising for it and was very involved in the first street party.
It's quite a small street if you compare it to Gwydir Street, so I'm kind of thinking that you can probably get most of the street involved in all of this.
Well, this year particularly, people have been involved because of Ian's blue plaques that I think have been the number one item on the BBC website this morning, nationally. But everybody likes to be involved. People have been coming along saying, oh, can I make some cakes for the cake stall? Or where do I drop off the books? Or, you know, do you want me to... There's a man out there manning the games, the fair, the sideshow games, who I've never actually had a conversation with until today. So it's great for bringing...
And you've got a number of musicians, I see, playing during the day as well.
We have. And they're all playing free of charge. The first band were called Klezko. They're a klezmer reggae fusion band, apparently. They were great. I think we've got Tiger Blue, we've got Thudbox, we've got a girl called Josie Harrington, who's an Irish singer, a girl called Alice Nichols. Please don't. Oh, and Dave Barr, the punk cellist.
Bit damp.
Skimbleshanks.
Skimbleshanks as well. Bit damp out there at the moment, but I'm sure it's going to brighten up. What time do you go on until?
We go on until 10, but it's going to start being sunny before 3:35 because I've got a bet on with someone.
I do hope you win that bet. It looks a little bit brighter.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Eileen. Back to you, Matt.
Thanks very much, Julian. That was Julian Clover reporting for us from the Covent Garden Street Party, speaking to Eileen there, who's one of the organisers and the landlady of the Six Bells. We'll cross back over to Julian in about 10 minutes' time for a further update from there. In the meantime, let's continue the great music here on Summer Saturday. Here's Iggy Pop.
Local and proud of it.
We are Cambridge 105.
Broadcasting from the city centre on 105 FM and online. Those were the Saturdays and up. This is Summer Saturday here on Cambridge 105 with myself, Matt Webb. I'm keeping you company through until 5 o'clock. A message that's just come in on text. It says, hi, thanks for the NGS garden interview broadcast just now. We look forward to seeing many Cambridge 105 listeners turn up to the sunny garden tomorrow. And that's from Mark and Sean Hugo. If you just missed it, we just aired an interview which Julian Clover conducted with that lovely couple and about their garden that they share in Aldrith. So well, you'll be able to hear that interview once again, actually, if you go over to our podcast page of our website, cambridge105.fm, over the coming hours. Now, joining me in the studio is a gentleman that's just been up to the Cambridge Bumps, which is taking place in Cambridge today. It's Mr. Lee Last. Good afternoon, Lee.
Good afternoon, Matt. I'm rather wet. I'm still dripping a bit. It's a healthy atmosphere down there, but it's damn wet.
Indeed. Will there possibly be with umbrellas out and things like that?
Most of the people that were sensible had brought an umbrella down. Me, myself, being not so sensible, I think the wet's got into my recording equipment, so I've had to come back to the studio and... talk about the event. Lots of people out supporting. The boats were in fine form as always. The coxes, as always, being quite particular, very, very forceful with their words. You listen to a cox. That's somebody you do listen to. Otherwise, they'll punish you big
time. You only have to watch the boat race to see that you listen to what they've got to say. Otherwise, you'll be thrown in the water by the sound and looks of things.
I mean, no differences. The men and the women, they were pretty... there was no differential between the behaviour of the coxes. They're always very determined. They've got to uphold their college's honour. And it was a good spectacle to see.
Was it a very competitive atmosphere between the various different boats?
Certainly. I took place on a footbridge near Chesterton, which was quite near the finish of both the races. And it was quite clear to see that the parties, the boat parties that go along on the cycles alongside the towpath, they're giving it noise, they're giving distances, they've got to keep pushing. You've got about half a mile to go. They all keep them very up to date with distances, times, and if they're lagging behind a bit, they certainly get a kick up the backside.
You were talking briefly about spectators. How many would you say were there roughly?
Well, it's actually quite... You know when the boats are coming because you see a massive bikes and people start walking towards you. There's got to be about two or three deep, say about 100 following each boat. Well, not directly following, but they're supporting the boats in action.
And you only have to watch the Olympics and you see people cycling along with the boats, and it's quite uncanny how they manage to cycle along, see where they're going, not bumping into people, and also take pictures at the same time.
Taking pictures, shouting directions at them, keeping an eye on where they're going, it's all quite important. I hear that there's very strict rules, because obviously the towpath gets quite busy. They're only allowed four per boat, four in a bank party and cycles. That includes coaches, VIPs, that kind of thing. Otherwise... presumably it'd be a bit carnage-like.
I think people would envisage megaphones and things like that, with people shouting at the side of the course to make sure that they get the relevant support. Were there people with megaphones, like those loud blaster hailers, whistles and things like that?
No, they've been specifically not allowed. I think obviously a noise pollution issue. We don't want someone about 2 miles away to hear instructions that are going to a boat about 10 metres away. Later on, I'll give you a full update on what the current situation is with regards to the May bumps, and we'll also give you a little bit of a taster of how the bumps were. That'll be on the way a little later on for you.
Fantastically, thank you very much. And we'll also be crossing back over to Julian Clover. He is at the Covent Garden Street Party this afternoon, braving the weather, although looking out of our window here at Gwydir Street at the moment, the rain seems to have eased off and a bit of sunshine breaking through the clouds. That's fantastic news, isn't it? It's just approaching 4 o'clock. It's Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. This is Summer Saturday. Let's continue the great music now. Is David Bowie and Mick Jagger and Dancing in the Streets. Community Radio in your city. We are Cambridge 105, Shania Twain there, and that don't impress me much. This is Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. I'm keeping you company through until 5 o'clock today. What's on that's just come in through to our studio email address? If you've got an event happening in and around the area and you like it plugged between 4 and 5 today, do get in touch. studio@cambridge105.fm on the email, or you can send me a text 07919 070 490. Now, Transition Cambridge Energy Group is holding a public information event on solid wall insulation for your home. Solid wall insulation used to be too expensive, but now there are grants available through the ECO, Energy Companies Obligation. You can insulate on the inside or on the outside walls. Either way, you can dramatically cut your heating bills and at the same time make your home more comfortable. A panel of industry experts and householders will share their experience and answer questions from the floor on Thursday the 27th of June. That's from 7:30pm through until 9:30pm, and that's at St Luke's United Reformed Church, Victoria Road, CB4 3DZ, and entrance is free. I'm sure we'll be giving that a little bit more promotion across the week here on Cambridge 105. Still to come on Summer Saturday at 4:15, we'll be crossing back over to Julian Clover. He's reporting from the Covent Garden Street Party. Be soaking up the atmosphere and have a guest in tow at about 4:15. And then at 4:30, Julian Clover also caught up with Anna Sinclair. Now, she's from the Cambridge Carbon Footprints and is working with Eco Homes to show how energy efficiency schemes can work in your favour. And we'll be hearing that interview at about 4:30. In the meantime, let's continue the music. Here's Mark Oldman and Gene Pitney. Something's Gotten Hold of My Heart. 4:08 on your Saturday afternoon. It's Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. Summer Saturday through until 5. Thanks for choosing Cambridge 105 on this Saturday afternoon. This is Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. If this is your first time of tuning into Cambridge 105, welcome along to the family. We are community radio in your city. And Summer Saturday is all about putting the spotlight on some of the events that happen in and around Cambridge, and possibly sending one or two of our presenters or reporters out to report on the actual things that make up summer in the city. And Lee Last, who joins me in the studio now, went out to the bumps a little bit earlier on. He told us about the event itself and what actually happened there. He's going to tell us a little bit more about what the event actually entails now.
It is actually it might be a bit bewildering if you just rock up. You might think, okay, we've got a load of boats, they're going to be going from point A to point B. It's not like that. So currently we've got 10 May divisions, each with 17 or 18 boats, which is apparently about 15% of the university participating. On the first day, they all turn up. They're lined up in the club's finishing order of last year between Batesbyte Lock and the top of First Post Reach out on the northeast of Cambridge. The starting point of each crew is defined by a chain attached to the bank, which the cocks must hold at all times. These are spaced so there is a gap of about 1.5 boat lengths of clear water between each crew. Crews are then pushed off the bank with about 20 seconds to go while still holding the chains. The chain is dropped on firing the starting cannon, and all crews start racing at the same moment. Now, the object of bumps racing, it's obviously not as simple as point A to B racing. The object of bumps racing is to catch up and bump into the crew in front of you without being caught from behind. Now, this is where things get a little bit, obviously, It might be a bit dangerous if you go full chat into the one in front. So if it's inevitable, the coxes, they have to put their hands up before physical contact is made. So if they're steaming up behind one, say, can't bump it, that'd be too dangerous. People will end up in the water. They've got to put their hand up and say, yes, we're faster than you, get out of our way.
So basically, it's a bit like the British Touring Car Championship then, with all the bumps and knocks and stuff.
Well, when I went punting, it was a bit of a hair-raising experience because we couldn't control the punt. Hopefully, these guys know what they're doing. That's all I'm going to say.
Here's an interesting fact. I bet you didn't know this. Many years ago, there was a chap called Spencer. Now, he appeared on an episode or the original series of Big Brother, I think it was. Now, he actually lived in Cambridge. And not only did he live in Cambridge, he used to work on the punts and actually punt along the cam. And I remember an episode, I know this isn't really related to Summer Saturday, but it's interesting because it's related to it anyway. When he was in the Big Brother house, Jade Goody asked, where...
Oh, dear. Like, oh, here we go.
Whereabouts in Norwich is Cambridge?
That says it all, really, doesn't it?
So, yes, that was Spencer. He did do a bit of a spell on a radio station as well. He presented The Breakfast Show for a week, and I don't think they ever got him back after that.
Oh, no. Surely he was epic.
Never
What's
mind.
Going on there?
Anyway, with regards to the bumps, I take it there was lots of students lining the canal, and not just that. Obviously, people coming out in their raincoats and their umbrellas and bits and pieces like that.
People passing by with their shopping. They had their hands full of shopping. They could see these boats coming, and you can see inside their heads, they're going, something's going on here. So they ambled over to the riverside, had a quick gander, went, oh, there's some fast boats going. They cheered a bit, and then after about three or four boats had gone past, they disappeared again.
Maybe you went along to the bumps today, and do let us know what you saw and how you thought the event went. All you need to do is get in touch with the studio. You can send us a text, 07919 070 490 on the text, or studio@cambridge105.fm on the email. We'll have another catch-up with Lee Laster in a couple of minutes. I think you've got something else to say now. Go on, then.
All I'm going to say is I'll keep you up to date with the results in about 10 minutes' time.
That's pretty much what I was going to say. You took the words right out of my mouth. As a very well-known song by Meatloaf went. Anyway, joining us on the line at the moment is Julian Clover. He's reporting for us at the Covent Garden Street Party now. Over to you, Julian.
Thanks, Matt. And I'm in the home of Ian Bent, a local resident who has done some research into the former occupants all the way along Covent Garden. He's taken pity on me, taken me out of the rain, and given me a cup of tea as well. Ian, thanks for speaking to Cambridge 105. Tell me what gave you the idea for this project.
Well, actually, it goes back a long way, because I was living in New York for nearly 20 years, and my wife and I decided that when I retired, we'd come back and we'd live in Cambridge. We had a house that we'd had for a few years. And over the summers before then, I decided I was going to look at the history of one or two of the houses in Covent Garden, because I realised that some of these houses are as long as 170 years old. They go back to the 1840s, and I really wanted to explore the history of that. And then... So I started doing that, and then I got involved in the cemetery. We have the Mill Road Cemetery is across Mill Road from Covent Garden, the end of Covent Garden. And I started exploring the people who had died there.
So you were able to match them up then, people who lived in the street and then buried in the cemetery across the way?
I was able to match them up, yes. So, for example, immediately opposite this house here, there's a terrace of five houses that were built in the 1880s. Soon after the speculators built them, they obviously had a contract with the borough police force, and these houses became what are called tied houses to the borough police force. For about 60 years, there's nothing but policemen there, which is why those five plaques are all policemen. And I found four of them, I think, in the cemetery as well. So I then started thinking to myself, well, I'd explore more about not just the buildings, but the people who lived in them, you know, to get a sense of the community rather than just the structure of the place. And then in addition to that, last year, a school teacher in one of the local primary schools decided to do a blue plaque project with their kids and got out the information from the 1891 census report. So if you walk along City Road near the Grafton Centre, you'll see, you know, Albert Burrows, railway shunter, lived here in 1891. I thought it was such a brilliant project that I decided I'd do it for the street party this time for all 44 of the houses.
And it looks like you've got most of them have managed to get the plaque in the window. You had no people who said, no, I don't want one of those in my house.
Well, I thought that was going to happen, but the strategy was to get those who I knew well and who were keen on it to put some in first. And then people began to ask, well, why haven't I got a blue plaque? So the boot was on the other foot. They actually wanted one then. So there were only three houses that are not actually occupied at the moment. And at 9 o'clock, I went out this morning and stuck them on the outside of the window.
Oh, brilliant. plan. So tell me, what sort of people did we have along the street? Who were your favourites, as it were?
Well, there's some awfully interesting pieces that people, in addition to the policeman. For example, right down at the far end, close to the drama centre, as it used to be called, were a couple called Dennis and Jean Collins, and they were known as local popular entertainers. They were puppeteers, comedians, jugglers, and they used to go into... They were known as Uncle Dennis and Auntie Jean. And they're probably known to thousands and thousands of school children because they used to go into schools and do little acts, teaching them in a humorous way about road safety, about not crossing the road without looking left and right first, you know. So that's one absolute gem. Then another one is delightful. Halfway up the road, there are two fairly new houses built in 1917 called 18 and 18A, and the A makes you suspicious straight away. And that's because there was one house, a big house at the back of the site called number 18, called Jessamine Cottage. And there in the 1890s, there was a man called Arthur G. Lyons. And in the earlier census reports, he's described as a boilermaker. But by 1895, he's described as a cycle maker. And there's one plan of the street which shows one of the outhouses of his house as a cycle workshop. And then in 1898, he asked the council, he applied for planning permission to put a cycle showroom in the front garden, and they gave him permission to do that. But when I looked up the history of the bicycle, I found that the modern pedal bicycle, a chain-driven bicycle, was only developed in 1885 in France. So this was a guy making these bicycles, apparently, in 1895. He must have been quite a cutting-edge character, really, to have in Covent Garden.
Cambridge ahead, as always. Yes. I'm wondering, this strikes me as like an interesting take on genealogy, because perhaps you've done your family or you've gone back as far as you can, start on the house where you live.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yes, it's very interesting to do that. It's not always all that easy because you have to mix lots of things. The house deeds will tell you some information if they survive. Mine survived very imperfectly, unfortunately. And then you go to the census reports and look at those addresses, because these days all census reports are online, and you can put in the address and for 1841, 1851, 1861, and so on, and you can get the information not of just the house owner, but of the whole family, including any lodgers or servants or anything like that. And then there used to be street directories, because you couldn't do street directories these days because of privacy laws, but it used to be a street directory published every year, giving every house and the householder and that person's occupation, and if he had a telephone number, the telephone number as well. So I bring all of those and various other things together. It's just like researching my family, but I'm researching somebody else's instead.
And the blue plaques, which we can see along Covent Garden today, those were designed by your wife, I gather?
Yes, that's right. Yes, I thought I'd better check up on them first. I just had a notion of blue plaques that I see in London saying, you know, Charles Dickens lived here from 1865 to 1872 and that sort of thing. So we actually went on the website and looked up plaques. And there's a nice little website about the history of what used to be the National... I forget what they were called now, but they're heritage, English heritage.
And you see them all over London, don't you? I think
you do indeed. And some of them used to be red, and some of them are blue. But they're made by Wedgwoods, and so they're in Wedgwood blue mostly, with white lettering. So I took pictures of some of those from the website. And my wife has an Apple machine, an Apple Mac, and she does quite a bit of graphics. She took it down to the Apple store and got them to create a template for her. And so they're quite elegant, really, aren't they? You've seen them.
They look very good indeed. Well, well done for coming up with the idea, and also to Mrs. Bent for creating the look of the plaques. And they're going to stay up for the next few weeks around the houses here?
It depends on the owners, you know. Some of them will get rid of them the next day, and I'll try and persuade them to give me them back in that case. But I hope some of them will stay up for a while. I'm doing a thing for something called the Talking Newspaper, which is for blind people. So you do a recording each fortnight, a recording's done. I'm going to do one on Tuesday morning with the lady who edits that, and I hope there'll be still a few left up there so I can wander up and down the street and describe them.
Well, the weather is finally brightening up here, so perhaps there's still time. Come down and see them sometime during the rest of the day. Ian, thank you very much.
Well, it's a great pleasure, Julian. Thank you.
With that, back to you, Matt.
Thank you very much, Julian. That was Julian Clover speaking to Ian Bent, the historian who researched blue plaques at the Covent Garden Street Party. We'll be crossing back over to Julian for one final time at 4:45. In the meantime, it is 25 minutes past four. You're listening to Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. This is Summer Saturday. This is a programme where we showcase all the events that we, as many events as we can, that are happening in the summer calendar in and around the city. And coming up in 5 minutes' time, we'll be talking to Anna Sinclair. Now, over the next couple of weekends, Cambridge Carbon Footprint is working with Eco Homes to show how energy efficiency schemes can work in your favour. We'll be hearing that interview right after Lighthouse Family. This is Ocean Drive on Cambridge 105. Good afternoon, and the sun is out. Look at that.
Make us number one on your radio preset. We are Cambridge 105.
Broadcasting from the city centre of Cambridge on 105 FM and online. A very good afternoon to you. This is Cambridge 105. That was Lighthouse Family there and Ocean Drive. This is Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. Now, over the next couple of weekends, Cambridge Carbon Footprint is working with Eco Homes to show how energy efficiency schemes can work in your favour. Now, a little bit earlier, Julian Clover spoke to Alana Sinclair about the scheme itself.
So, Alana, thanks for coming in. Tell me about Open Eco Homes, the organisation.
Well, Open Eco Homes is actually a project of the charity that I work for called Cambridge Carbon Footprint. Basically, the idea is really, really simple. It gives people an opportunity to go into homes that have been renovated to make them more environmentally friendly, have a lower carbon footprint, or new homes that have been built to be more sustainable. So it's really an opportunity for people to, I guess, get some practical information and maybe a little bit of inspiration about how they can make their own homes more environmentally friendly.
I guess there's two sides to this, really. On the one hand, you've got a lot of new build going up around Cambridge, and on the other side, of course, you've got a whole load of beautiful Victorian terraces across the city.
Yeah.
Starting off with the newer properties, when the architects and the planners come along, are they actually thinking about the carbon footprint?
Well, I mean, obviously the homeowners involved in Open Eco Homes have definitely done that. I think the regulations have changed over the years so that most new builds have a fairly decent standard, you know, in terms of insulation, there are regulations around that side of thing. But there really is still a lot more that can be done, particularly in terms of, you know, just draft proofing and all of those sorts of things that can still make a really big difference to your fuel bills and how warm and comfortable your home is.
And do you go so far as to recommend solar panels going in when a new property is built?
I mean, if you've got your roof that's facing the right way, generally speaking, it's definitely worth doing. There are also, you know, feed-in tariffs and those sorts of things that make it economically a sensible option as well as being environmentally friendly. So,
because there is still a certain bit of nervousness about this sort of thing, in the same way that, for some strange reason, television aerials are regarded as a thing of beauty, whereas satellite dishes are supposedly ugly. And in many ways, it's just, if you like, progress of building design.
Yeah, and in fact, solar panels have really, really come a long way, you know, in the last 15, 10, 5 years even. And the sorts of solar panels that you can actually put on your roof have changed dramatically. There are ones that are much, much thinner. There are ones that you can barely tell apart from the tiles. So it doesn't even have to be, you know, an aesthetic choice. You don't have to be worried about the aesthetics of what you're doing to your home. You can still have it look beautiful and have a solar panel.
So tell me about the Victorian homes and how easy it is really to, if you like, retrofit some eco-friendliness into properties which have been around Cambridge for, I guess, 200 or so years in some cases.
Well, I mean, there's really a whole raft of things that you can do. And we try at Open Eco Homes to show the full range of things, because there are some really, really simple things that you can do, in fact, free things that you can do, you know, just behavioural changes that you can make that really make a huge difference to how warm and how comfortable your home is. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with insulation, for example. I think there are some grants which you can get according to how thick your loft insulation is at the moment, in order to perhaps, you know, keep some of that heat within the property.
Yeah, there are grants available. Probably, to be honest, not as many as there were around, you know, a couple of years ago. Everything's sort of changing now with the Green Deal that's coming through.
Do you think that's for better or for worse? Is it one of these sort of deals that is put forward and actually turns out to be a way of saving the government money?
I definitely think that the Green Deal surveys are a really, really valuable tool. you know, for however much it costs, £80, £100, you can get someone who's an expert to come in and actually have a look at your home and give you a whole list of recommendations as to, you know, what the best measures are for your home to make it more energy efficient. You know, knowledge is always power. What you choose to do with that then is completely up to you. So you can choose to take out a Green Deal loan, which, you know, perhaps is not the most economically sensible thing to do. There's more information coming through on that at the moment. But you can always choose to privately finance those initiatives if, you know, you choose to go ahead. So, I mean, overall, I do think it's a fairly, I think it's a fairly positive scheme.
So you've got a number of homes which are open around Cambridge today, and more importantly, in the next week or so as well, because I gather that it's you need to book in advance for this.
Yeah, so we've got tours happening today, as you said, and also next Sunday. And you do need to book. They are free, but you need to book on the website, which is openecohomes.org. We've got about 16 homes around Cambridge, so there really is a diversity, you know, from Victorian homes, as you mentioned, right through to the new builds. So you can go out and see a home, which is just
these
like
are real life people who have made an effort to do something to their homes. Is it expensive? That's the worry. If you've already got a house, unless you're replacing something in particular, then it could turn into a costly exercise, could it?
We've got a lot of homeowners, particularly this year, who have done things over a really long period of time. So, you know, they've done small things, maybe made a plan for the next 5 years and sort of worked their way through it. There's always something that you could be doing, whether it's, you know, something that's small, perhaps free, or just as simple as getting a pair of heavy drapes. You know, everything makes a difference, you know, making your home warmer and also reducing your fuel bills.
Mm. What's it like for people who open up their homes? It must be, I don't know, it's bad enough letting people go through your house when you're moving, but without doing it just for the, just to let them see how you're saving on your fuel bills.
Well, I think that's actually the really nice part of Open Eco Homes. You know, there is all of that sort of information side about how, you know, and what you do to your home. But the fun side is that the homeowners are actually really keen to share. You know, they've been through their own journey. They've been through all of the stuff. And they're actually really keen to kind of impart some of that knowledge to other people. And generally speaking, they're just all really nice people, so, you know.
I guess it takes, in a way, a sort of a special kind of person or somebody with a particular interest to start things off. You know, I guess in technology terms, you might call them the early adopters. And then, over time, that spreads through to the rest of the community. Do you think we're in that sort of stage yet?
You know what? I think we are. If you look at the homeowners that we have, they're from all walks of life. You know, all different ages, all different stories. So, you know, I think it is something which people are more conscious of, you know, particularly with rising fuel bills. I think it's going to become even more normal.
Okay, Alana, well, thanks for coming in. Just before we close, if we could remind people of where they need to go if they want to take a look at some of these Open Eco Homes next Sunday, I think.
Yep, next Sunday. Have a look at the website, www.openecohomes.org. We have case studies of all of the homes for you to read through, and you can book online there or you can call the Cambridge Carbon Footprint offices.
Thank you very much, Julian. That was Julian Clover speaking to Alana Sinclair there. We'll be crossing over to Julian Clover because he's still at the Covent Garden Street Party at the moment, so we'll have one more link back from him in about 10 minutes' time. Let's continue the music now. Here's Paloma Faith and Stone Cold Sober on Community Radio in your city, Cambridge 105. It's Summer Saturday. But the sun is shining once again here in Gwydir Street after the awful spell of rain we had about 15 minutes ago, and it has dried up a little bit outside. And for one final time, we can cross over to Julian Clover, who's at the Covent Garden Street Party. Good afternoon, Julian.
Matt, I've managed to find myself some Morris men here in the middle of Covent Garden. They have their accordion, they have their hats, they have their sticks, and they are banging them together. It's much better weather than it was for Morris men. I'm pleased to say the sun has finally come out on Covent Garden, which means that people are coming into the street just a little bit more than they were earlier on when we had all of that rain. And it really is pretty good. There's balloons here just by the Six Bells pub where we were a little early on talking to Eileen, the landlady. And all the way down the street, we've got bunting. There's the plaques on the side of the houses, as we mentioned when we were speaking to Ian a few moments ago, bunting towards the end. And when you get to the theatre, of course, there is that really interesting history project, which is worth a look at. There were circus skills earlier on. And it really is, from what I've found here this afternoon, quite a nice little close-knit community, really. And with that, I will hand back to Gouida Street. Matt, all yours.
Thank you very much, Julian. It sounds like you're having a fantastic time there. I'm surprised that Julian didn't actually take part in the Morris dancing himself. We could have seen some pictures on the internet. That would have been rather amusing, wouldn't it? Anyway, thanks very much to Julian and his reports across the afternoon from the Covent Garden Street Party, as well as the other interviews that he did earlier in the week as well. We'll have one further and final update from Lee Last with regards to the bumps that are taking place in Cambridge in about 10 minutes' time, just before 5 o'clock. In the meantime, here's Dobie Gray and Drift Away. It's Cambridge 105, Summer Saturday. Good afternoon. Anyway, Lee's in the studio because he's going to give us an update on the bumps and who you think the contenders are going to be.
Oh, well, we've got a lot. There's a lot of results coming in. There's a lot still in contenders. There are several divisions we're going to have a look at the minute. The women's number one division, currently in contention, the top three, Downing College, Clare College and Jesus College. Women's division number two, we've got Magdalene currently in the lead, followed by Kings and Murray Edwards. Women's division number three, Cassius the second, currently in the lead there, Hughes Hall and Queen second, and we'll have a few more very shortly indeed for the men's.
It's funny you should say Magdalene, because there was always this big debate as to whether it's pronounced Magdalene or Magdalene.
No, it's like Mary Magdalene. That's the way I see it.
Yes, you weren't involved in the Olympic torch relay on one Sunday morning when I was linking back from Magdalene Bridge and was very abruptly told by a university professor that it is pronounced Magdalene and not Magdalene.
Oh, well, if they had a nice hat on, you should always listen to the bloke with a nice hat on, OK?
Fantastic stuff. And, of course, you'll be back on Monday because you're doing the lunchtime show on Monday. What you got planned?
What have I got planned? Well, as always, it's Fly By The Seat Of Your Pants Radio. We'll have the usual stuff. Monday Rock Trio from 12:33. Absolutely corking songs. That'll be on the way. Did I say from 12:30? I meant 1:15. From 12:30, we have the Monday Lunch Club, which is where we get you to get involved. Send what you're having for your luncheon. Is it slap up or having a Boggo standard sandwich? Pop in a request, simple as that. Studio at Cambridge105.fm. That's me, Lee Last, Monday from 12.
You're such a pro. And the original lunch club. None of this breakfast club malarkey.
What is this about a breakfast club I hear on certain other stations? No, lunch club on a Monday. It's where it started, folks, OK?
I'll tell you what you should do. You should, after Brian O'Reilly's show, who's on before you, we need to get a video camera and we need to record you dancing with him out in the reception area while he's hoovering up. There's a thought.
Oh, yes.
Need I say any more? Just if you're friends with Brian O'Reilly, presents our mid-morning show on Facebook, do have a look on his Facebook page, because Tim tweeted something on there, I think, a little bit earlier today or yesterday, and it is quite amusing. Doesn't involve this radio station, but it involves another one. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, this has been Summer Saturday here on Cambridge 105. The show will be back on air again next Saturday between the hours of 3 and 5. I'll be presenting it from the studio again, and a whole host and raft of reporters will be out reporting from the big summer events that are happening in the city's calendar. My thanks go to Lee for going along to the bumps today, and hopefully your phone will dry out and you'll be able to record some stuff for next week.
Fingers crossed.
And also my thanks goes to Julian for his live links back to us in the studio from the Covent Garden Party, as well as his interviews that he did with regards to the National Garden Scheme and about the Eco Homes Project with Alana Sinclair. As I say, Summer Saturday will be back next week. You can hear the podcast of some of the interviews over the coming hours, and that will be available on the Cambridge 105 website, which is found at cambridge105.fm. Over the coming hours. But from me, Matt Webb, I'll leave you with some more great music, and Jason Allen will be up at 5 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Check us out online at cambridge105.fm.
We are Cambridge 105. 105. 105.